Fragments. Is not this the carpenter's son? October 30th, 1902. Typed. Is not this the carpenter's son? Matthew 13, verse 55. During the early part of his ministry in Galilee, Jesus visited the home of his childhood and youth. Upon the Sabbath, he was requested to take part in the services at the synagogue. He stood up to read, and there was delivered unto him a roll of the prophet Isaiah. Luke 4, verse 16, 17. The scripture which he read was one that was understood as referring to the Messiah. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord hath anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek. He hath sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to be captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Isaiah 61, verse 1, 2. Jesus explained the words of the prophet with such clearness and strength of reason that the inhabitants of Nazareth, who knew that he had never attended school, were greatly amazed. His friends in Nazareth had heard of the miracles that he had performed in the region round about. The praise that others gave him had reached them and excited their curiosity. Because he had performed no miracle in their city, they were jealous. If he has power to effect such cures, they questioned, why does he not exercise his power in his own country? If such cures can be wrought by a word or a touch from him, there need be no afflicted or sick in Nazareth. Jesus discerned the thoughts that were agitating the minds of the people. He answered their heart questionings by the words, Ye will surely say unto me this proverb, Physician, heal thyself. Whatsoever we have heard done in Capernaum, do also here in thy country. And he said, Verily I say unto you, no prophet is accepted in his own country. Luke 4, verse 23, 24. Jesus then referred them to the miracles of Elijah. I tell you of a truth, he said, many widows were in Israel in the days of Elias, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, when great famine was throughout all the land, but unto none of them was Elias sent, save unto Sarepta, a city of Sidon, unto a woman that was a widow. Verses 25, 26. This widow was a heathen. And many lepers were in Israel in the time of Eliseus the prophet, and none of them was cleansed, saving Naaman the Syrian. Verse 27. The Jews were proud and conceited. They regarded themselves as being peculiarly favored of heaven. The words of Christ excited them to feelings of rage and hatred, for they perceived that he applied the words of the prophecy to them. They were astonished and said, Whence hath this man this wisdom and these mighty works? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary? And his brethren, James, and Joseph, and Simon, and Judas? And his sisters, are they not all with us? Whence then hath this man all these things? Matthew 13, verse 54 to 56. Heaven can heal every earthly sorrow. In his word, the Lord hath given special directions that must be taught to others in order to be obeyed fully. In all religious work, both words of reproof and words of encouragement are to be given by God's faithful representatives. Parents should acquaint themselves with the Word, that they may know how to form habits of character in accordance with the will of God. The Lord desires to give parents a knowledge of the written Word. There is a world to save, and we gain nothing by cutting loose from those we are trying to help. All things may be lawful, but all things are not expedient. We have no right to do anything that will obstruct the light that is shining from heaven. Yet by a wrong course of action, we may imperil the work and close the door that God has opened for the entrance of the light of His truth for this time. New York City. Letters come to me from different places saying, Sister White, you must help us here. No other voice can give us the help that we so much need. We cannot go further without assistance. It was thus in New York City, and this is the reason that I undertook my journey east late last fall. From the light that I have had, I know that New York City must be worked, and that now is the time for this work to be done. Elder Haskell has struggled to gain a foothold there, but where are the means to begin the sanitarium work and the hygienic restaurant work that should be established in that great city? We are glad to be able to say that already a restaurant has been opened in Brooklyn. The Battle Creek Sanitarium. Every medical institution that we establish should be established with reference to the next one that will be needed. When it comes to any one man's assuming the control of an institution that should be under God's control, it is an abomination in the sight of heaven. God will have to be with the Battle Creek Sanitarium and preserve it, else it will not be preserved. And He will not preserve this institution, even if our brethren make it the largest sanitarium that the world has ever known, unless it is conducted on right lines. The beginnings of our schoolwork in Australia. We had to struggle in order to start the school in Australia. For 11 months I was helpless, suffering from rheumatism and malarial fever. In the night season, the necessity for a school and the way to begin work were presented before me. The very next morning Willie came into my room, and as he came near me, I noticed that his eyes were a little brighter than usual. "Mother," he exclaimed, "I have light." "Wait a moment, Willie," I said. "I too have light, and as I am the oldest, I am going to tell you the light that I have received, before you tell me yours." "It has come to me," I said to him, just as plainly as if the voice of God had spoken it, "that I could help them start the school. I could take all the royalties that I receive from the sale of my foreign books published in America, and use them as a fund with which to start the school." "Mother," my son exclaimed, "that is exactly the same plan that came to me." Both of us had received the same light, although we were several miles apart, he being in Melbourne at the time, and I being in Preston. For many years I have not touched the royalties that accrue from the sale of my foreign books in Europe. Not a penny have I taken from the thousands and thousands of dollars that have been credited to me from this source. Everything is used for the education of foreign workers and for the translation and publication of my books in other languages. And when we received this light, I desired to give to the school in Australia the royalties of all my foreign books sold in America. This enabled us to start the school there. About that time, Elder Haskell sent me several hundred dollars, writing that I should not say anything about it or give any note for it, but that I should use it for my personal needs, as he knew how much I was in debt. But I used every dollar of his gift to help to establish the school and to buy furnishings for it. As I was considering these matters in the night season, some of our people, to whom had been entrusted the matter of buying the school supplies, were represented to me as being in a store, where they were selecting the finest of linen for tablecloths and napkins. Just the moment that I saw the linen being laid aside, I said, "This is not the thing to do at all. Those who are coming to attend our school are poor. What kind of an education would they receive if they were given this fine linen to use? How would our other multitudinous expenses be met? Not one of these expensive things should be purchased." When I awoke, I did not remain idle very long. I hurried off a letter to Elder Daniels in the city, as quickly as I could, and it arrived there just as our people were settling the bill for the fine linen and other expensive articles that I had seen in the night vision. The message arrived at the store just in time for our workers to cancel the order. "My money is not to be used to buy such expensive things for my own table," I wrote. "I like to have neat table linen, but I never buy the most expensive." Thus we worked to establish a school in Australia. We had to plan in every way to secure sufficient money to carry us through. Brother Haskell kept sending us some money occasionally, and this enabled us to accomplish what we otherwise could not have accomplished. I put $3,000 into this enterprise, and am thankful that I had the privilege of doing so. The results of eating flesh meat. The Lord will cut His work short in righteousness. The earth is corrupted under the inhabitants thereof. Disease of every kind is now afflicting the human family. The misery created by the corruption that is in the world through lust is developing in a startling manner in the commission of crimes of every description. Robbery, murder, sensuality, the cruelty of satanic powers, these and many other evils are seen on every hand. We are surrounded by unseen dangers. When will those who know the truth take their stand on the side of right principles for time and for eternity? When will they be true to the principles of health reform? When will they learn that it is dangerous to use flesh meat? I am instructed to say that if meat eating ever were safe, it is not safe now. Diseased animals are taken to the large cities and to the villages and sold for food. Many of these poor creatures would have died of disease in a very short time if they had not been slaughtered. Yet the carcasses of these diseased animals are prepared for the market, and people eat freely of this poisonous food. Such a diet contaminates the blood and stimulates the lower passions. Many parents act as if they were bereft of reason. They are in a state of lethargy, palsied by the indulgence of perverted appetite and debasing passion. Our ministers, who know the truth, should arouse the people from their paralyzed condition and lead them to put away those things that create an appetite for flesh meat. If they neglect to reform, they will lose spiritual power and become more and more debased by sinful indulgence. Habits that disgust the heavenly universe, habits that degrade human beings lower than the beasts, are practiced in many homes. Let all those who know the truth say, "Fleshly lusts that war against the soul." 1 Peter 2, verse 11. Let not any of our ministers set an evil example in the eating of flesh meat. Let them and their families live up to the light of health reform. Let not our ministers animalize their own nature and the nature of their children. Children whose desires have not been restrained are tempted not only to indulge in the common habits of intemperance, but to give loose rein to their lower passions and to disregard purity and virtue. These are led on by Satan not only to corrupt their own bodies, but to whisper their evil communications to others. If parents are blinded by sin, they will often fail of discerning these things. To parents who are living in the cities, the Lord is sending the warning cry: "Gather your children into your own houses. Gather them away from those who are disregarding the commandments of God, who are teaching and practicing evil. Get out of the cities as fast as possible." Parents can secure small homes in the country with land for cultivation, where they can have orchards, and where they can raise vegetables and small fruits to take the place of flesh meat, which is so corrupting to the lifeblood coursing through the veins. On such places, the children will not be surrounded with the corrupting influences of city life. God will help His people to find such homes outside the cities. Oh, if our people would partake of the divine nature, they would be enabled to form characters that would make them a spiritual temple, holy unto the Lord. Ye are not your own, for ye are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19, 20. He who delivered Israel from the degrading servitude of bitter bondage and adopted them as His peculiar people has again set His hand to deliver a people from the bondage of sin and to adopt them as His sons and daughters. He gave Himself for us, that He might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto Himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. Titus 2, verse 14.